Can't you see it? A glistening 100-megawatt solar field begging to be built? It's photovoltaic modules and balance of system powering a renewable energy tomorrow that's squeaky clean? We know that unless you have the right supplier, that world might just be a fantasy. But here at Graybar, with years of renewables experience, we live in that world. Get in touch to see for yourself.
We are now ready to depart.
Book your visit at graybar.com. Yep, Graybar does that.
Do you believe you were wrongfully terminated for speaking up against your employer? Wilshire Law Firm isn't afraid to go up against corporate giants and will protect you every step of the way. Get justice and feel safe. Call the experts at Wilshire Law Firm at 1-800-800-3333.
Hey, football fans, are you obsessed with the game?
Oh, yeah.
Do you find yourself looking for breakdowns from every angle? For those who can't get enough, subscribe to Brian Baldinger's podcast, The Best Football Show, where he discusses the top teams and players from around the league each week.
That's what I watched this week, a dominant performance.
New episodes drop every weekday, including Trench Talk Tuesdays with former NFL lineman Mark Schlereth. Make sure to subscribe to The Best Football Show on the Odyssey app or wherever you find your podcasts.
It's a Young Guns takeover of the KNC Masterpiece here on 105.3 The Fan. My name is Alec Medford of the KNC Masterpiece. His name is Blake Elliott of The Fan After Dark. And we got Chris Strong on the ones and twos for you, the Turn It On, Leave It On listener. You are just about 19 minutes and change away from the expressway. We go uninterrupted to the top of the hour. All kinds of sports content to get to, including the interesting conversation that Blake and I had before the show about the future of J.J. McCarthy and the Minnesota Vikings. Intrigued to talk about that coming up here in just a little bit. Plus, we'll do some Dallas Cowboys and Dallas Mavericks New Year's resolutions coming up during the expressway as well. But right now, I do have some NFL overreaction or reality for each and every one of you. 877-881-1053 to answer these questions along with us. I'm going to start with the Cowboys. We talked a little bit with Mickey Spagnola about said player. NFL overreaction or reality, the football playing career of Ezekiel Elliott is done. And we all know that it was a very uninspiring season from him, because a lot of people levied expectations that we dove really deep into earlier in the show about some unfair expectations on him and towards the team, just on what he can and should be doing for the team, lead ultimately to his release. He's on a really cheap contract, so you think, maybe someone will pick him up on waivers, you know, for a playoff run. Nope, didn't get claimed. He's a free agent. And there's no rumblings or anything about him potentially signing with another team. So I say it's reality. I think the playing career of Ezekiel Elliott is done. In my mind, I don't see another team giving him a flyer or anything. Like Mickey said, might not be a bad idea to pick him up, as, you know, on the practice squad as he said, an insurance policy. And then you elevate him from the practice squad and you don't have to pay him really anything. It would make sense, but I just, at this point in time, I don't think anybody does it.
I don't think he gets on another team. I don't think he plays meaningful football anymore, because I think no team would have signed him this offseason if it weren't for the Cowboys and doing it just out of love for their boy Zeke. So I'm going to go with nonfiction. I think this is reality.
NFL overreaction or reality. We go across the NFL now. I want to go to the AFC. Talk about the Cincinnati Bengals.
Oh, gosh. That's my team. My boys.
Oh, so you're a Bengals fan.
You see that sticky note up there? They were 1-4. I said the 1-4 Bengals would make the playoffs, and they're 1 week away.
Well, that actually ties in perfectly to this question I have for you. NFL overreaction or reality. The Bengals will miss the playoffs, and they are about to embark on a team overhaul.
Nope.
And what do I mean by that? The first part is pretty simple. They're not going to make the playoffs. Two, they have a lot of questions with their roster construction. And I'll even say it, a lot of people have said it, it's nothing new, their head coach. Zach Taylor has had some blunders in his tenure there. A very talented team with a very bad defense. Probably should have more wins on the season than they do, because if they're even one game over 500 right now, Joe Burrow is probably the MVP of the NFL this season. with the otherworldly stats he has put up this season and the way he has carried that team on his back. Zach Taylor might be on his ninth life as the Bengals coach after Cincinnati outlasted Bo Nix and the Broncos on Saturday. He opted to go for it on fourth down twice early in the game and nearly mismanaged the end of that game before they measled out with a win. And then you talk about some of the other decisions they're going to have to make regarding T. Higgins. T. Higgins is due for a contract, and he's kind of pulled the Micah Parsons route, saying, I don't have to be the highest paid at my position. I just want to win. And something interesting that might help, I think, is he switched agents and now has the same agent as Jamar Chase, who got a massive contract from the Bengals with said agent. So there could be a world where they have to get rid of T. Higgins because of salary cap reasons, Joe Burrow taking up a big chunk of that, and there could be a situation where they miss the playoffs and Zach Taylor gets fired. NFL overreaction or reality?
It's an overreaction. The Bengals are going to win against the Steelers this weekend. The Broncos are going to choke and lose. The Bengals then will make it to the playoffs. And like you mentioned, them having that same agent, Jamar and T. Higgins, they're going to find a way to make it shake. T. Higgins is going to take a little bit of a pay cut, understand that this is the team he's got the best chance of being a star and winning on. And the Bengals will stay pat. Now, I do think there has to be some tertiary moves to be made around the exterior of the team, whether that be the O-line, the defense. Oh, my gosh. It seems like all the good offenses this year have no good defense to back them up. Zach Taylor, that's still kind of up in the air. I'm not completely sold on him, but I'm not calling for his job yet. So I think there is some things that need to change. I do not think it'll be within the offensive core of T. Higgins, Jamar, and Burrow, and they will make the playoffs, and I think whoever they play in the first round, they'll upset them and win.
Ooh.
Which will be the Bills, I guess, right? It's almost set. It'd be the Bills.
And for the fun of it, and from the 9-4-0, the Dolphins also have to lose for the Bengals to make it.
I have to check the tiebreaker on that because I don't think that's true.
I thought there was another game that they're dependent on.
I know for sure if the Broncos win, they're in. I do know that. And then if the Broncos lose, the Dolphins and Bengals have a chance. But I think the Dolphins have already kind of punted on their season. They're playing Snoop Huntley.
Let's see. The Bengals do need some help, it seems. Next steps for Cincinnati involve two teams losing on Sunday.
Okay.
One of them is the Broncos, who are going against the Chiefs, a team that can rest its starters. Yep. So that's already tough. And they need the Dolphins to lose.
So if the Dolphins and Bengals both win, then the Dolphins have the tiebreaker over them? Because they both had the same amount of wins. They're both 8-8. I didn't know that.
Yeah. So they definitely need some help.
Well, Dolphins are going to lose anyways. They're playing Snoop Huntley.
Yeah, but there's a lot of weird games this week where you have backup quarterbacks and stuff. It's a really ugly week of NFL games. There's a couple that are really important, like Sunday Night Football with the Vikings and the Lions. But there's not many teams that still have anything to play for.
Dolphins are playing the Jets too.
Which I can't even tell you how that game's going to go. That ugly, ugly, ugly.
That's a crazy way to end the season.
But we were talking about clock mismanagement, game mismanagement just a second ago with Zach Taylor. NFL overreaction or reality, Raheem Morris cost the Falcons a trip to the postseason. And I say that because they had their best chance to win the NFC South and reach the postseason if they beat the Washington Commanders on Sunday Night Football. They failed to do that. Morris should have called the first of his two timeouts remaining in regulation after Michael Penix found Darnell Mooney on the first play of their final drive of the game. Instead of keeping at least 30 seconds on the clock, the Falcons ran their second play with 17 seconds remaining. They found themselves at their own 44-yard line for three plays before calling a timeout when the play clock expired. Then, they needed to kick a 56-yarder, which they missed, as time expired despite a pass interference call. So NFL overreaction or reality, Raheem Morris costed the Falcons a playoff spot.
It's not the first time he's done this. He's done this before this season. It's had bad clock management happen in the first half of this game, happened in the second half to end the game as well. For some reason, he went to the first half with three timeouts in his pocket. I don't know if he thought they'd carry over, but they don't, Raheem, just letting you know. Bad clock mismanagement, especially Why do we see the bad clock management with the young quarterback? Why is that always apparent? We saw this with Caleb Williams and Eberflus, the end of that Lions game. Like, if you're going to have bad clock management, you're doing it with a veteran quarterback. It's like, hey, in your head, you might not say this publicly, but you're like, in your head, you're thinking, hey, my quarterback who's very smart is going to call a timeout or going to spike the ball or going to get the ball out of bounds. I don't have to really think for him. With a rookie quarterback, you have to have the training wheels still on. You still have to be, hey, this guy maybe doesn't realize the moment. Let me have a timeout ready. Let me have a second timeout ready. Let me let him know exactly what we're going to do. I don't know how many more times we're going to watch a rookie quarterback or a very young quarterback and the head coach is looking just as dumbfounded on the sideline, mouth open, just like, man, sure would be nice if you called a timeout right now. You call the timeout. What are we doing? So, yes, Raheem Morris cost his team a playoff spot. I said that the Falcons would lose out to end the season 0-2 the last couple, and the Buccaneers would win out and win that division, and I think that's what's going to happen because the Falcons going Falcon.
I just want to know why in the year of 2024, now 2025, why are professional head coaches still screwing up end of game situations with the game clock?
It's not even an overcomplicated one. It's not like, oh, we got to do this and timeout here. And
this one made perfect sense. It felt like a linear path to avoiding overtime, but instead you ask your kicker in a very important spot to kick a 50 plus yarder and he misses and then you lose the game. I don't understand why in this day and age, with all of the technology we have, with all of the analytics, you know, and everybody talks about that. Everybody and their mother wants to say, oh, the analytics guy upstairs telling them to go for it here and stuff. And it's like, yeah, that stuff is 100% true. Why do they not have a guy buzzing the head coach saying, take a timeout? Why is the offensive coordinator, or the defensive coordinator, special teams coordinator even, if they are experienced enough, if they've been around, and really you don't need to be the smartest guy on the field to say, we are under a minute and we have two timeouts left. Take one. You know, you just completed a pass over the middle of the field and the clock is still running and you could have had 30 plus seconds left. Instead, now you have 17 with two timeouts. You don't get to take that timeout with you to overtime. You don't get to put it in your back pocket, take it home and bring it with you and have four timeouts in the first half of your next game.
And that's a young team over across the board. It's not like there's many veterans even on outside of Penix. Bijan's a young guy, Drake London, Pitts. Like, there's not like, we've got all this experience. Like, you got a bunch of young guys in a huge moment to get a playoff spot, and you're just, I don't know, trying to be too smart, trying to be too cute. I don't know. Maybe Raheem Morris can explain that one day, but too many faults for a team that needs to win, and you would hope that their coach could help them climb out of that.
Yeah, and from the 940, Kirk Cousins cost them the playoffs by playing awful most of the year, which all in all, yes, that ended up being the biggest failure in the NFL, outside of maybe the New York Jets experiment, you know, everything that they had going on there. Ultimately, Kirk Cousins is the biggest disappointment in the NFL, which I hate saying because it's easy to root for that guy, but he just has been a traffic cone in the pocket. He's not mobile. Like, he's what everybody says is Chris Paul is in the NBA. He is literally a cone in the pocket, only works exclusively from the gun and cannot move. But they kind of got a little bit of a breath of life from Michael Penix, and it seemed like that offense was rolling with him. So you got to reward them with good coaching decisions after that. And that's a one game, one situation where you could have propelled yourself into a very beneficial situation for your young quarterback to get some meaningful reps. Now you're scratching and clawing, hoping for something else to happen away from your team to help you out. And now this could end up being a very pointless game all in all. NFL overreaction or reality, the Raiders and Giants will regret their late season wins. And does it, at this point, I'm just going to ask, does any team want the number one pick? Yeah, it feels like nobody wants the number one pick this year because they keep winning and costing themselves the number one pick. Like, Do you not want, you know, a Shedeur Sanders? Do you not want Cam Ward? Teams that have no quarterback for the long-term future are winning games that they don't need to be winning. And look, I understand. You saw it from the Giants players after their win against the Colts. They were literally verbally saying, screw your number one pick. Like, we are out here playing for our jobs. We are playing for each other. We are playing, some of those guys, for our careers, you know? And I get that. But if you're the front office, especially John Mara, the owner of the Giants, he's got to be kicking himself that they won that game. Because you saw from Hard Knocks over the offseason how hurt he was when Saquon left. You know, and he said he's our most popular player. We can't let him go to the division rival. And he does just that. So now you got to think, huh, if you're the owner of the Giants, like, we got a chance to draft a really popular guy. And this is going to be nice. We're going to boost jersey sales and maybe it'll expedite a little bit of a rebuild here. Nope, you're not going to have that choice anymore. And same for the Raiders, who it looked like Shedeur Sanders for a while was kind of telegraphing he wanted to play there.
Can I give you an interesting stat that I was looking at when we were doing that Kirk Cousins?
Entertain me.
How many passes outside of the pocket the entire NFL season do you think Kirk Cousins completed this season?
Five.
Outside.
Five.
Less.
Are you serious?
Three.
That's criminal. We talked about his agent being a legend at the bank. He's more than a legend. Like, he is the bank.
So instead of calling people pocket passers or scarecrows or whatever, we just call them Cousins now. He's looking real Cousins back there. Doesn't want to move from the pocket, Jim.
Such a Kirk.
I mean, to complete three, I mean, you've only had to attempt maybe like six or seven, right? I would assume it's not even much more than that.
No, what would be hilarious is that's all he attempted. So yeah. He was perfect outside the pocket.
Just say just three 100% times. Outside the pocket. Don't ask me how many attempts, but 100% outside
that
the pocket.
That is amazing. I'm glad you mentioned
currently
that.
Currently slated with the number one pick is the Patriots.
Which is interesting because they have a quarterback on a rookie contract. So if I'm Elliot Wolf, the guy who's running things out there now, even though it's like he's got the GM title, but he doesn't, it's a weird situation. I move on from that pick. I trade it. I get a ton of assets back. And just like I said a second ago, you expedite that rebuild with a bunch of picks.
Do you try to make deal with the Browns, who have the third slated pick? It goes Titans, Browns, Giants, Jags. I think the Browns could be real desperate to get that number one pick maybe and get a Shedeur.
I don't know if the Browns are going to go quarterback because they just restructured Deshaun's deal.
You're right. Maybe the Giants, even though they've messed themselves up, now they're going to have to trade back up to one.
Someone's going to be desperate enough. You just saw it a couple years ago with Carolina.
Yep.
They were desperate enough because they said, we have nothing to look forward to at the quarterback position. There's got to be, like, I don't see a world where Vegas is not entertaining.
I think 7, 8, and 10 are really interesting totals. Have this to chew on. 7 is the Jets. We just talked about Aaron Rodgers. What if they make a move for the top two? 8 is the Raiders, who we know want a quarterback but keep winning games at the end. They're kind of screwing themselves. And then 10 is the Saints. They need a quarterback too.
And they're in cap hell. They can't afford a quarterback. They need to go find
one. They need to draft one. So.
They need to draft one. That's a good point. And Spencer Rattler, it seems like they don't believe in him all that much. As much as Saints fans want to tell me he's the greatest thing since sliced bread, I don't think they actually, the team really sees too much in him. He's more of a backup guy. Man, that's a good point. Might have to bring that back up later because I got to think about that.
There's going
to
be some movement in the top 10 for sure.
Coming up next here on the KNC Masterpiece, we enter the expressway where we got a lot to talk about here. Interesting J.J. McCarthy conversation, but 877-881-1053. We want to hear your DFW sports New Year's resolutions, Cowboys, Stars, Rangers, Mavericks. If you have a New Year's resolution that you can magically make come true for your favorite DFW sports team, let us know. 877-881-1053. We have that plus the Pro Bowl is set. Do you even care? Next on The Fan.
And Rush is going to throw a fade. Left side to the end zone. Leaping up. Is it caught?
Tolbert.
Touchdown, Jalen Tolbert. He takes the team lead. And the game's about to be tied.
That fan replay is brought to you by Ciroc Vodka. Please drink responsibly. It's time for the Expressway here on 105.3 The Fan. We go uninterrupted up until the top of the hour. We got plenty of football topics to get to here. Interesting J.J. McCarthy conversation coming your way in just a moment. But we want your DFW sports New Year's resolutions. 877-881-1053. If you've got a New Year's resolution for the Cowboys to figure out. Seems like they've got a lot of things to figure out. If you got something for the Stars, Rangers, Mavericks, anything you want. Let us know, 877-881-1053. We will share some of ours coming up here in just a little bit. While you ponder that and you think about what yours will be, we were talking pre-show, and this easily could have gone into NFL overreaction or reality, but a fun conversation because of the wildly unpredictable success of the Minnesota Vikings this season without their rookie first-round pick quarterback, J.J. McCarthy. They bring in Sam Darnold on the one-year, $10 million deal. And just needed a dude, right? You just needed somebody to play. And, well, what if I told you that they're in play for the number one seed in the NFC? You probably wouldn't have believed that this offseason as soon as you saw the knee injury occur for J.J. McCarthy. And they find themselves in a really unique position, Blake, where they've got two quarterbacks to choose from. One on an expiring deal that has skins on the wall and has won you a lot of games this year. 14 to be exact.
Pro bowler, man.
Pro bowler. We'll get to that here in just a second, too. But you've also got the first round quarterback that is essentially redshirted his freshman year, if you will, because of the knee injury. So he goes into year two fully healthy. Ideally, he sat and learned from, as Mike likes to call him, Sammy D. And do you stick with that? Do you keep Darnold, which all the reports are that they would like to keep Sam Darnold? How they do that? Questionable. Do you go long-term deal until kind of like the Jordan Love situation in Green Bay, where it's like near the end of his rookie deal, you give him 1 year to figure it out, and then you see if you want to keep him? Do you franchise tag Sam Darnold and you keep him for one more year and try to run it back again next year with relatively the same team and you hope to improve? Because the franchise tag doesn't really carry much of a massive cap hit in the ways that traditional contracts can. So it's a very easy to maneuver cap hit for the Minnesota Vikings. Or what really sparked this conversation, do you move on from J.J. McCarthy? Because there are reports out there that teams will be calling the Minnesota Vikings just to test the waters and see if they would be willing to move on from him in the right scenario. I can see a multitude of things happening here. If I had to make the decision right now, I don't think it's wild to say that the more talented quarterback is Sam Darnold. I don't think... it's wild at all to say you have the best chance to win with Sam Darnold. I don't think Minnesota really screwed themselves in this situation. I think they got incredibly lucky, and their scouting department needs a couple of raises to go along with this, because there's not a lot of situations where you say both of our quarterbacks make sense here. You saw it in Atlanta. It got to a point very quickly where one of the quarterbacks made more sense than the other, and they make the switch from Kirk Cousins to Michael Penix Jr. You've seen it in other places as well, and you could have seen it with the Broncos even, you know, where they had a couple of veteran guys in training camp, but Bo Nix showed enough early, and they said, we're going to go with the young guy. I don't think you have as clear cut as an answer, but in my mind, with the Minnesota Vikings, you do keep Sam Darnold, and I think you franchise tag him. If I do it right now, I franchise tag him, and we say, let's try to get one more year out of it, because we don't know who's going to win the Super Bowl yet. If I were a betting man, which I'm typically not, I would put money on Kansas City, just because it feels like they're inevitable. It feels like they're Thanos in the NFL with Andy Reid and Patrick Mahomes. You cannot beat them in any situation. And the path to the Lombardi, the path to New Orleans, runs through Kansas City. It runs through Arrowhead. With the Minnesota Vikings, I feel like the NFC is a lot more unpredictable. So they're going to find themselves in a situation next year where they might be able to run it back with the same quarterback, same head coach, the same tools, and maybe add a little bit to it.
My question is not only next year, but the future of the quarterback room. So my question is, Sam Darnold going to be here more than just a year after, not just 2025/2026? Are you going to sign him to a long contract? You talk about franchise tag and you're talking about short-term deals. I don't know if Sam Darnold's agent is going to want to do a short-term deal. I think this has been some of his best football, probably his best football that he's played. And his agent is going to want to capitalize on that and sign a long-term contract, whether it be with the Vikings or with another team. And here's the dilemma that you're in, is I do believe he's going to want that long-term contract. And I don't think the Vikings are going to want to sign him and keep JJ, who they just spent a top 10 pick on, just sitting there on the bench for 4 or 5 years. So you have to kind of make that decision. I think in a perfect world, yes, you sign him to a one-year deal, franchise tag, kind of ride it out, see how he does. JJ gets another year of rehabilitation and gets to learn under Sam Darnold and all as well. But I just don't think the two are going to coincide as far as timelines go. So I feel like you are going to have to make a decision. And I was a little dumbfounded by this. Sam Darnold, younger than Joe Burrow, 1 year younger than Josh Allen, 2 years younger than Baker, 4 years younger than Dak, 6 years younger than Geno. I think people forget this guy is only 27.
Yeah.
And still has a lot of football in front of him. I feel like you kind of have to make a decision. Do we want our guy to be Sam? We see he works great with Kevin O'Connell. This system works, yada, yada, yada. And we're going to move on from JJ and get some great draft compensation back for him. Or are we saying, maybe this is a little bit of flash in the pan. We'll see how it is maybe one more year. And we know JJ's our long-term guy. Because I think people forget, I personally was not a huge JJ fan coming out of Michigan. I think there was a lot of doubters around his name. And when he got picked top 10, everyone was kind of like, interesting. But he balls in the preseason. Probably looked like the most accurate quarterback in the preseason out of all the rookies. Over Caleb, over Bo, over Jaden. JJ looked like the real deal. And me, just as an NFL fan, when I saw him have the knee injuries, I'm like, dang, that sucks. I thought he was going to have a good start to the year, him and Justin Jefferson, him and Jordan Addison. He's already had two surgeries on his knee to repair that meniscus that he messed up in the preseason. So it'll be interesting to see if the Minnesota Vikings are able to leverage, hey, JJ, you're still our guy, but Sam gives us the best chance to win, with Sam saying, hey, if I'm your guy, I need a long-term deal, because it's the best football he's played. He's going to want something more secure than, I think, a one-year deal.
And I mentioned it a second ago. You've seen that work before. It, like you're saying, it's a very murky water situation where you're walking on eggshells. You don't want to upset anybody in this situation. You want everybody to be paid. You want everybody to play. You want everybody to be happy. But there's only one football that can be snapped to one quarterback.
Correct.
And just to give you a little bit more of an idea, the franchise tag projected number on over the cap for next season, $41.3
million.
But if you think about it, three-time Hall of Famers down the hall. He's not in here. if you think about it, that's not a high premium to play if you know, or if you even feel, that you are getting a potential 14-win season next year. Mm-hmm. $41 million compared to a Dak Prescott contract. You know, I'm not trying to draw comparisons here or say anything about Dak's deal. He deserved it when he got it. You're paying about $20 million less for just 1 year of a guy who should be making market value money. When you talk about a 14-win season, potentially even 15 wins come this Sunday. The value is there. And the money is there for Sam Darnold, because I know you have a good point, but with the agent and the player might not want to take that, but who's going to turn down a guaranteed $41.3 million?
Who would you be willing to pay first? Just in a vacuum, obviously two different situations. Brock Purdy or Sam Darnold? Sam Darnold was having a better year this year, but obviously hasn't shown it over 2-3 years, which Purdy did. Went to the NFC Championship, went to the Super Bowl, is not playing that great this year. Out of those two guys, both are due for contract, which are you more willing to pay? Like, hey, this guy's earned it, whether it be for one season or throughout a couple with Purdy.
It's tough because you've seen more sustained success with Purdy. You've seen more dynamic playmaking from Darnold.
Correct.
And there's
it's most recent.
And I will say, as successful as Purdy has been, there is a reason that Sam Darnold was a first-round pick, and there is a reason that Brock Purdy was the dead last pick in the NFL draft.
We're getting into the spicy conversations. They don't want to hear that.
I don't care if they don't want to hear it. Brock Purdy is a system quarterback, and that's fine. That's worked in the NFL numerous times. And Kyle Shanahan is almost considered the godfather of that, taking quarterbacks, building a system that is very much a don't mess it up system. But you saw this year how things changed a little bit when the playmakers weren't available for him the whole time, when Christian McCaffrey had to go to another country to get treatment just to miss the rest of the season after a few games?
Yeah.
George Kittle, you know, he gets beat up. He ends up playing most of the season, but he misses a few games on you because he's a warrior. He takes a lot of hits.
Trent
Debo, Williams. Debo Samuel, not who he used to be. Brandon Ayuk has the knee injury, misses most of the season after he gets his payday. You mentioned Trent Williams, one of the best offensive linemen that I've ever seen in my life. But he'll miss a few games on you as well.
Their defense.
Not what it used to be. Fred Warner, I don't know how they are making this work, but Fred Warner, they're saying, has been playing with a fractured ankle the entire season.
Just got Dre Greenlaw back.
Yep, and he's been on a pitch count too. So, like, there's a lot of things that can and will go wrong on an NFL roster with an NFL team. And a lot of the times that benefits, or it impacts, I should say, the quarterback.
Players
quitting at halftime, you know, stuff like that. That happens, and some of those less often than other things. But I would say Sam Darnold is a guy that I would want to pay and try to win games with more, just because he's shown a more dynamic ability. Like, him breaking the pocket is something I never really expected, but on the run and avoiding pressure, he knows how to step up. Like, He does the right things at the right times, and he'll still make a couple of throws that I'm like, what did you see there, brother?
So, yeah, your random NFL team, Giants, Raiders, whatever, both guys are available. You're giving the money to Sammy D before Brocky P, correct?
Yes, and okay. I don't like Brocky P. That doesn't sound – that sounds like a disorder more than a nickname. From the 972, their prediction is that Sam Darnold gets signed by the Raiders.
I can see it. Just on like
a four-year deal.
These teams that don't have the number one or two overall pick, they're like, hey, we'll cash the money out. Who else have we got to pay?
That raises the question. What does the Raiders' 2025 cap situation look like?
I got you. Give me just a second. I had it all.
Because that would be interesting. It looks like they have a lot. I am seeing right now, as of right now, they have $33 million, but they can free up a lot with expiring deals and whatnot going into the offseason. So that's a team that definitely makes sense because they might have played themselves out of a premium quarterback in the draft.
Talking about the Raiders?
Yes.
They have the second, according to Spotrac, they have the second highest effective cap space, only behind the Patriots. And this is like signing 51 players, projected rookie class, all that stuff. So pretty much the cap space you'll have after that. They have projected $92 million. Only the Patriots have more going into 2024.
Which makes the whole Patriots conversation that we had earlier a lot more interesting about moving that number one pick, because if they move that, get more picks, and then they have a good free agency, which they typically don't. But, you know.
Shout out to the double tight ends.
Yeah. Jeez, that was awful. But if Elliott Wolf running things now has himself a day in free agency, you know, it's a team that can turn things around. And really, the Raiders, I think, have a lot more questions than just quarterback. Don't know if Antonio Pierce is the dude for the job.
Mean, Max Crosby seems like he wants out of there with all the losing. That's their only good player right now. So Brock Bowers.
Christian Wilkins exists, too. Yeah. And he was one of their only good moves in free agency the past few years. Yeah. So
Jacoby Myers didn't drop a pass this year.
Hey, weird stat of the day. I don't hate the idea of Vegas being aggressive in the free agent quarterback market, and Sam Darnold is going to be there. You know, it fully depends if Minnesota goes the route we talked about with that franchise tag. If they go that route, nobody's getting him. He's staying in Minnesota, which I think is very much in play. But I'm keeping him. You know, point being, the whole conversation culminates in this. If I'm the Minnesota Vikings, I keep Sam Darnold, especially if he locks you up a number one seed in the NFC, and y'all try to make a playoff push here, a real playoff run. Yeah.
I think it's really tough. I don't think there's a clear-cut answer, because say this, riddle me this, Alec, they play the first round, they get blown out. Do you still have the same thought process? Does the playoffs impact it?
It depends how Darnold plays. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Because if he goes out there and, like, let's say he doesn't throw a pick or anything, like, he plays a relatively clean game, but they get beat, I don't know, 35-14. Bless you again.
Thank you.
It's fully dependent. It's kind of like the conversation we had on this show a couple days ago ahead of the Boise State game, where it was like, is there anything Ashton Jeanty can do that will plus or minus move his draft position? And it was like, no. He could go out there and rush for 40 yards. He's still the best running back in this class. He could go out there and rush for 250 yards. He's still the best running back in this class. I'm kind of that way with Darnold, where unless he goes out there and throws five interceptions and he goes to the podium after the game and says again, I was seeing ghosts, then I still think the world of him. I think he has rebounded. And I think part of it is the system that Minnesota has with their head coach. He's a quarterback whisperer, and he's just a player whisperer. He gets guys to believe in themselves whenever they don't think they can. Example, Kirk Cousins last year before he got hurt. You saw in the quarterback series on Netflix where Kirk Cousins is a very emotional football player. He needs the people around him to support him, and he needs help believing in himself. Kevin O'Connell does that. You saw that post game in their game with the Colts where he went up to Anthony Richardson after he got benched, and he said, hey, you're going to be in this league for a long time. You're going to play for a long time. Just keep your head up. Just keep your head up. And I think Darnold needs a little bit of that. Not nearly as much as a Kirk Cousins, but I think he needs a little bit of that.
Well, with that theory of talking about how he's a quarterback whisperer, which I do agree with, don't you think that he could say, hey, well, I can get a cheaper, younger, more impressionable quarterback in J.J. McCarthy who's got better mobility, and I can use that money that I would give to Sam Darnold elsewhere?
That's the part where this conversation has multiple answers.
Yeah.
A lot of things make sense. I just think that if you are trying to make the Super Bowl right now, if you're trying to do it here in the next year or two, you keep the quarterback that just won you 14, possibly 15 games.
Yeah.
That's where it gets really, really weird.
I mean, in a sense, it's a win-win, but what they do might affect long-term. I think they'll be set next year, but do they sign him short-term, long-term? Not at all. JJ looked great in the preseason, but he's coming off now a major knee surgery. I don't know.
Good conversation there. All that being said, let's get to some DFW sports. New Year's resolutions, 877-881-1053. If you have any New Year's resolutions for any of your favorite DFW sports teams, Cowboys, Rangers, Stars, or Mavericks, let's get to them right now. I did see from the 817 DFW sports resolutions, they have a list of them, and I like that. They said, one, see Mike McCarthy not get a new contract. Number two, see the Rangers win a second championship and force the Astros into the rebuild phase, which it seems like Jock Peterson is already trying to do that through word of mouth, which he's already one of my favorite Rangers, and he hasn't even taken a single at-bat. But that opens up a wide-open conversation here, starting off with a bang. Mike McCarthy not getting a new deal as a New Year's resolution. So this feels like I've done this in my time here. I've run this segment pretty much every year that I've been able to host around this time of the year. And that seems to be a recurring theme for the Dallas Cowboys. And it's just the overarching idea of change.
Mm-hmm.
And usually it's from the top down. Mm-hmm. And that starts and a lot of times ends with your head coach. And I mean, we were talking about it, Will Chambers, Mike Bassick, and I earlier this week. Isn't it amazing to think that, you know, just a couple weeks from now, last year, everybody was saying, get McCarthy his cardboard boxes, pack up his office, get him out of here. Almost everybody was on that train saying, let's move on. Let's find somebody new. Don't care who it is. We just want something different. Sports fans always want change. And that's where you start here from the Franco and Franco injury attorney text line is getting the head coach out of there, which I haven't gotten to do radio with you in a while. So I haven't really gotten your grasp on this Cowboys season a lot. Where your Mike McCarthy returns-o-meter, what percentage is it at?
Well, if he's going to return, and do I want him to, are two different percentages. When it comes do I think he's going to? After that Eagles game, I would have maybe said 2%, maybe 1%. Since then, they've looked like the best team that's trying to win games when they shouldn't be, because a Mike McCarthy team when they're not supposed to win, winning, you know, who would have thought of that?
Oh, yeah.
I probably would say it's like an 85% chance. I mean, every time Jerry has a chance to speak highly about him, he does. Now, I will say, a little caveat, he did do something similar to Garrett in the season before.
Yep.
Was saying never really outed his job, never really said he was coming back, but every chance he had a chance to talk about him, talked highly of him. So I will say a little caveat, maybe that's the play, but it seems like a lot of the guys are fighting for him. It doesn't seem like, oh yeah, the team is ready to move on, and we've heard from this source that they're already planning this head coaching guy. There's nothing really that's come out. No smoke around McCarthy leaving, but I personally, Blake, am not like enthralled to have him back. Now, you might be pushing back and say, well, why, Blake? He's 12 wins here and 12 wins there, and he's gotten the Cowboys to this, and everybody was injured. It's not McCarthy's fault. And while I do agree, I do not think this season is McCarthy's fault. I think it's more on the front office or not putting a great team around him. What do we want to learn from McCarthy was, can you make that playoff push? I think people forget it, caught up and lost in translation of what this season was supposed to be, was can McCarthy get you over that playoff hump? And I don't think this current quarterback, coach, and star players, the core of your team, is going to get you over that playoff hump. That's just Blake's opinion. You can disagree. You can agree. 877-881-1053. And I just don't think this core is what it takes to win a Super Bowl, mainly the coach and quarterback. Now, obviously, some people agree. Some people disagree with that. But when Carter interviewed us not too long ago and asked our New Year's resolution for the 105 Through the Fan Instagram, mine was the Cowboys to not be afraid of failure. It feels like people have all these crazy takes about Jerry and whatever it may be. My biggest thing, I think, is that he is afraid for them to hit rock bottom. Whether that be sales, whether that be the team, whatever it is. He doesn't want them to rock bottom. He's not necessarily going to lose it all for them to hit the top. But like, hey, if we can be right here in the middle, 8 wins, 12 wins, first round of playoffs, just good enough, Pro Bowl players, like he's fine with that. And I'm not in Jerry's head or in the locker room, so I don't know that for a fact. It's just me speculating. But I feel like he's afraid to make that big step, getting that head coach no one's heard of, drafting that quarterback, drafting that wide receiver, whatever it may be, doing that step of a leap of faith, if you will, of, hey, this could pay off, and maybe we're the next best team in the NFC, a Lions type, a Green Bay, moving on from an Aaron Rodgers to an unknown Jordan Love guy and a young receivers, like that kind of step, the Lions overhaul the roster versus like, hey, because he wants to stay right, doesn't want to go below league average. And the Cowboys never are really like, we thought they were going to be at this season. They kind of cleaned themselves up to be kind of right around a little bit below league average. They weren't the Panthers or the Raiders or the Giants where they're 2-3 wins getting blown out by 40 every week. So I just think that would be my New Year's resolution. Taking a leap of faith. Feels like the Cowboys don't want to do that. And at some point, you're going to have to do more than just a soft rebuild.
Mediocrity is a drug, right? Like,
correct.
It feels like in pro sports, you hit the nail on the head there that so many, and it's not just the Cowboys, it's just the microscope that they're under is so much bigger. The magnifying glass sees a lot more things that, like, so many organizations and owners and coaches are just so okay with being okay. They don't want to be good, they don't want to be great, they want to be okay. You know, and like you said, the fear of irrelevancy drives them to make decisions that aren't exactly conducive to being great, to winning. Because the only time that I feel like I can remember it being successful is like the Kansas City Chiefs before Patrick Mahomes. Mm-hmm. With Alex Smith, they were a perennial playoff team. They kept making pushes. They would fizzle out in the middle to the end of the playoffs, and they could just never make it over that hump. They draft Patrick Mahomes, and it's almost instant success. That's the only recent time I can think of mediocrity kind of getting a team somewhere. But even then, mediocrity was a little bit on the less successful side because they had a good enough pick to get Mahomes there in the front half of the draft.
Shout out to the Bills.
Exactly. But outside of that, especially in football, you don't really see mediocrity getting people places. I mean, look at the Houston Texans. We regard them this year was a little bit of a struggle with injuries and their offense didn't really look the same, but we saw them as a bottom of the barrel team for so long. And it took them being absolutely horrible and admitting that they made the wrong choice, signing Deshaun Watson to a long-term deal, getting an absolute fleece of a trade made to the Cleveland Browns. They used those assets to not only find their new quarterback, but to find who could be a generational pass rusher in the process, kind of like the Cowboys did a few years ago with a dude that wears number 11. And they're finding themselves in the playoffs now. And they're still a ways away. They're still not a great team. They still have plenty of holes to fill on that roster and a young and inexperienced coaching staff.
Think how fast the Rams turned it around.
Exactly.
Won the Super Bowl, had all these expensive contracts, older players, no draft picks, and just, what is it, 2 years later back in the playoffs with fifth and fourth round guys.
Yeah, and it works. And for the Cowboys, it's a lot more of a popularity contest than it is an on-the-field product. Mine that I gave, we totally stole this idea from Carter because he wanted to do this for social media, but I was like, man, I could give you like 10 minutes of a video. And it was like, well, you need to keep it under like 15. I was like, you know what? I'm turning that into a segment. There you go. For me, it's expanding on what you'll see on the fan social pages is commit to the run game, man. Re-sign Rico Dowdle, bring him back, 1,000-yard rusher as an undrafted free agent, never done before in the history of the Dallas Cowboys franchise. Bring him back. Like, he's not going to be so expensive to where you have to bat an eye, I don't think. He's definitely going to get paid more than you expected him to in free agency, but he's not going to be richer than you can afford. I can tell you that right now.
Can I ask you this? What do you want the running back room to look like next year?
In Alec Medford's perfect world, there's a dude named Ashton Jeanty as your running back one, and then Rico Dowdle splitting the carries with him in his rookie year.
Okay.
Because I think it's a short-term deal for Dowdle. I think it's like 2 years at best. And then you can see that real complementary football in the running back room itself, which is what you... All right, I say you. It's what the team told us was going to happen this year, and it didn't at all. Rico Dowdle is the one talented running back in your running back room, as shown by what happened yesterday. Ezekiel Elliott getting released, if you missed that news. But for me, it's just keeping a commitment to the run game like you used to. It feels like Cowboys of old used to have a very big commitment to it, but go draft a running back, whether it is Jeanty. I already saw somebody text in and said Scattaboo would look great with a Cowboys star on his helmet. I think there's a lot of good running backs in this draft that would be good value picks that don't have to be day one picks, that don't have to be day two picks.
Devin Neal, Marion Hampton, there's a lot of good guys.
You just can't do what you did last year and not address it whatsoever.
Yeah.
You have to get somebody to play with alongside Dowdle. He can't be your only option. I think he's a running back one in this league. I really do. I've said that for weeks now. I even told Jerry Jones that. I just need to see somebody that can give him a break.
I think one of your first three rounds has got to be used on a running back. I would probably go second or third round just because I think Rico is giving you that luxury. I think the way Rico has finished this season has shown you it is not priority one. Not saying it's not a priority. It is not priority one to get a running back because I think this O-line, and I hate to say this, it might be sacrilegious, but with Zach Martin, they've looked better. Sorry to say it. Brock Hoffman and TJ Bassender have looked better than Zach Martin did this year. All love to the guy, Cowboys legend. But with this new offensive line, even Terrence Steele hasn't looked half bad. And Rico back there, they've been a top 10 rush game and arguably top five since Rico's been taking over. So I don't mind getting a Hampton, a Neal, you know, some of those guys, a Scattaboo, whatever, in the later rounds. I think for me, my biggest priority for the Cowboys minorly getting into draft talk, I think it's got to be another receiver. A receiver or a corner. Because now, a corner, you know how many corners you have on the roster next year? Three. One of those guys is Kalen Carson. Love him. But
he just needs time. Yeah.
Not ready yet. And the other guy is a guy coming off another major surgery and Trayvon Diggs.
Yep.
And then Deron Bland, of course. So,
who hasn't stayed relatively healthy in his own right.
So do you want to use your round one pick on a corner? It's not a bad choice. I wouldn't mind a receiver because outside of CD, who's...
Brandon Cooks is about to leave more than likely, too.
More than likely. Jalen Talbert. I call him Talbert all the time. Talbert and Turpin.
Where did that come from?
I don't know. Me and Fred always messed up their names on purpose. Tolbert to me is a wide receiver 3 or 4.
I think he's a 4.
He's a 4. And Turpin, love the guy. Quick as all get up, but a wide receiver 5, 4, that's a gadget that's fun.
That's my guy, man.
I love Turpin. Mingo?
4th round pick, baby.
Good run blocker. Ryan Flournoy, who's looked good in spades, but Like, I don't know if any of those guys, I think all together, if you mix every guy I just named plus Jalen Brooks, you have a wide receiver three.
Jeez. Put them in a blender, and you're still not going to get anything good, according to Blake Elliott. There you have it. One more from the Frankel and Frankel injury attorney text line from the 806, because I like this. For the Rangers, find a long-term closer. 3+ years.
I agree.
Which is hard to do in today's age of baseball, because they usually get traded around. But
you want Kirby back?
Oh, absolutely.
Okay.
And I think they do bring him back. Okay. That's not based off of anything. That's just me being confident and putting my life on the line for Chris Young, because I think he's the best GM in baseball. Coming up next here on the KNC Masterpiece, let's talk to our friend Kyle Yeomans of DallasCowboys.com here on The Fan.